Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Great to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours. I'm a little more snuffly than usual.
Uh-huh.
So I hope that it's not too distracting.
Uh-huh. A little cold, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not. It's allergies.
Allergies.
Yeah. We're having, you know, this fabulous wet and green California spring, and
yeah,
I'll tell you, it takes a toll on the sinuses.
Uh-huh.
In fact, everywhere I go, I hear people kind of snuffling along, and I say, you have cold? They go, oh, it's allergies.
Huh?
Oh, me too.
Yes. Yeah.
I think things are blossoming that haven't blossomed probably in years.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the rain just goes on and on, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It's wonderful because it's going to be, you know, we're going to be green into June, which doesn't always happen in California.
Uh-huh.
Very, very fun.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Sherry, we have some exciting upcoming events.
What's that?
Well, on June 25th, Living Compassion invites you, your family, and friends to be our guests at a concert in San Jose.
Uh-huh.
Yes. With musical artists Trish and Richard Brexfort Colligan.
That's right.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about their music.
Well, of course, I love their music. And I think you can actually go to our website or, I guess, go directly to their website. Do you happen to know what theirs is?
Yes, it is. It's at riversvoice.com.
Riversvoice.com. And have a little listen. I think it's some of the most beautiful spiritual music I've ever heard. It's we use words, you know, heart opening, inspiring,
uh-huh.
And to me that's perfectly descriptive. It's gorgeous, and they're wonderful folks, and they're coming all the way out from somewhere.
Huh?
I started to say Minneapolis, and then I realized I think that's where they're flying from, but that's not where they live. But anyway, in the Midwest. And, they're going to come out and do a concert for us. And it's a big thank you and appreciation for folks who are involved in whatever way with Living Compassion and or who would just like to come and have their heart open and be inspired and hear a little bit about Living Compassion and what we're up to and like that. So I think we can promise people a very fun afternoon.
Great, great. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And if you'd like to come, please send an email to information@livingcompassion.org so that we know to look out for you.
That's right. So save a place for you.
Exactly, exactly. Great. Sherry, you're going to be in Massachusetts later in May.
Yes, I am, at Kripalu.
At Kripalu,
wonderful,
a workshop on depression.
Yeah, a wonderful, beautiful place. And, come and visit. It's a Friday to Sunday workshop. And it really is a fabulous place. If people haven't been there, it's just glorious. In that time of year, it's exquisitely beautiful, and we're going to have a good time.
Yeah, in the beautiful Berkshire Mountains, right?
Yes.
Great. Great. If you'd like to find out more about that, you can go to Sherry's website, which is sherryhuber.com, spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R.com. And those dates are May 20th to May 22nd. And as Sherry said, that's a Friday through Sunday. And locally here in the Bay Area, Sherry, you're going to do a workshop this Saturday called What's Getting in Your Way?
Yes, in Palo Alto at the Zen Center.
Yes.
Yeah. What's getting in your way? It's funny. I don't know if this actually happened, but they were going to send out a little email to people asking them what's getting in your way of signing up for this workshop, which I thought was kind of fun. It's like, you know, in awareness practice, we're always looking at resistance, and if we're not, we really ought to be because we're probably in resistance, and that's why we're not looking at resistance. But it's just kind of fun, you know, even right there to check in with, well, you know, in this moment, what is getting in my way of you know, having the life I want to have, or enjoying where I am in my life, and being in this moment and present to what's going on right now. So, I think it's going to be fun.
That's great.
Yeah.
And I can only presume that you're going to answer the question of what's getting in our way.
Yes, of course. Actually, what I'm going to do is encourage people to find out for themselves, which is one of the things that I like best about Zen awareness practice, that nobody gives you any answers. We're just kind of encouraged along the way of finding out for ourselves what is so. So that's what we're going to be doing. So it's great. You know, when I was talking, I think, last week about the Kripalu workshop and how the topic is depression. But anybody who has been doing awareness practice for any length of time at all knows there's only one topic. And that our way of talking about that is, how can we wake up and end suffering? And so everything we look at has to do with that. What stops us, what gets in our way, what helps us, what supports us, you know, so we can be looking at money or sex or relationship or career or children or retirement or exercise or whatever it is, it's all the same conversation. And so we're looking at that very simple, very specific point from through every kind of lens we can find, from every possible direction. So, you know, we could go to a workshop titled anything, and we're still going to be looking at the same thing.
The process of how we live life.
Yeah, how we cause ourselves to suffer and how we can end that. And so, you know, for that reason, it doesn't really matter to me. Sometimes people will get very, you know, intense about, well, what is this workshop about? And you know, usually by the time people figure out it's all one workshop, you know, they're okay. They're in the process. But you know, you can go to the bookstore and you can go to Eastern philosophy, and you can read about anybody in there, and the message is exactly the same. Everybody is saying exactly the same thing. Then you move over to you know, you want to find out, well, what did Jesus say in regard to all this? And it's exactly the same thing. You know, all different kinds of people have different ways of saying it, but it's all the same thing. Do you experience yourself as living in the presence of God? If so, you experience yourself as being fine. If you experience yourself living outside the presence of God, then you will suffer. Now, the Buddha, of course, didn't talk about it in terms of the presence of God, but it's all the same thing. It's just a matter of how you frame it, how you look at it, how you talk about it. So I like translating, and I like going anywhere and doing anything and kind of listening to anybody, as a matter of fact, because I love translating. So no matter what somebody's saying, I'm saying, oh, I think my experience of that, oh, okay, I think when I experience that, I talk about it as da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So the topic is, how do you get in your own, in your way, and how can you get out of it? The topic is depression or fear or food or, you know, exercise or procrastination or whatever it is. I can go there and I can have my own workshop on how am I causing myself to suffer and how can I drop that so that I can end suffering regardless of the content.
That is great.
It makes things very easy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sherry, we have a caller.
Oh, good.
I'd like to welcome Jane from Colorado. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good afternoon. Hi. Great to hear your voice.
How are you?
I'm great. And wondering.
And wondering?
Wondering. Yes, I have a question.
Oh, isn't that excellent?
Isn't that great?
Yeah. What is it?
Well, it is. I am relatively new to this practice, and it has absolutely transformed my life, and it has opened my heart to be more compassionate to myself and others. And now someone very close to me is in excruciating pain, and I'm feeling it more deeply because of my heart opening. And I don't think that there are very many voices. It feels like it's not about making stuff up. It's just real, raw pain. that doesn't feel like it's suffering and doesn't feel like it's, you know, hungry ghost. It's just real pain, which is real, right? And I'm wondering what the practice offers us in dealing with this.
Okay. Now, as you know, we're not terribly content-focused, but it would be helpful to me if you could just say a little bit about what this pain or what the situation is of the person.
It is my daughter who, you know, there's so many extraneous connections between mothers and daughters, and it is her going into a deep depression and feeling like she can't get out.
Uh-huh.
And so it's me being more present with that and having this extraordinary compassion that I love, you know, because I am just so much more present with her because of the practice.
Yes.
But now I've left her, and I've just brought home this horrible pain.
Yeah. Yeah. And does it feel, when you're there, you were there physically with her for a period of time.
Uh-huh.
And how would you describe that experience?
It was being compassionate, and it's that empathy of being with her in it.
Yeah.
And that felt real and deep, and even though it was painful, it was really good.
Uh-huh.
But then when I leave, I probably do have some stories I make up about, you know, the pain of not being with her and the pain of not being able to help and the pain of her not growing up and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So it shifts a little bit from that just being together and it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
She's hurting. You're hurting. She can cry. You cry.
Yeah.
There's not even a what should we do about this. It's just really hard. It's a hard, hard place.
Being present with
and
each
then,
other in it.
Yeah. And then there's a little distance, and the stories start in. Right?
Yeah. Cause you're right. There are stories. Yeah.
Yeah. So
darn
now
it.
It's what can you do and what should you do and what does it mean and what's going to happen and what if this and what if that. Is that?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, of course, that's where, you know, I would encourage you to tune in and watch how conditioned mind wants to take over that experience and kind of use it for its own ends.
Oh, that's brilliant. It's the taking over the experience of being together.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now it's actually, I think, you'll have to look and see, but it's actually inserted itself between you and your daughter.
The stories have inserted themselves?
Yeah. Yeah. Conditioned mind, conditioning, has now put itself in that space. There was a time when you were right there together. Now there's a distance, and it's put itself in that space between you. And so now it's going to interpret for you what that experience is and what it means and what's going on with her. It's going to take you into the past to tell you, you know, about her childhood and how you were and things that happened. And then it's going to take you out into the future where it predicts this and fears that and laments that and worries about that.
Oh, and it's so good at making stuff up about the unknown.
Yes. Yes. Now, again, when you're right there together, you're not making stuff up about the unknown, and you're not allowing it to, right? Because you're right there, and you're fully occupied with being right there.
Oh, that's so great, and they're so tricky and so smart that they were like, no, no, Jane, now this is real.
Yeah.
They're so tricky.
Yeah, anytime you hear a voice saying, no, no, this is real.
Yeah.
That's a clue.
I love that.
Yeah, it's like hearing the voice that says, no, no, I am your center.
Yeah,
Oh, really?
this you really should just sit around and cry about. This one you just need to sit around and cry.
Yeah,
because this is real and this is true, and what it means is this, and what you're to do about it is sit around and cry about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because they can take your joy away.
Oh, yeah. Well, they can take your sensitivity, your passion.
Did you say sensitivity?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, my teacher used to do this routine. I don't know if you've ever heard me quote him on it, but you call me up and you tell me that you have a terrible case of the flu. And I say, oh, my gosh, oh, that's awful. I'm coming right over. Okay, I'm coming right over. And so I arrive at your house, and there you are. You know, you're in your bed. You've got a cloth on your head and a thermometer in your mouth, and you're just so sick. And I'm just overwhelmed with sympathy for you. Okay? In fact, I'm so overwhelmed that I cannot stand up. And so I just push you over a little, and I lie down in the bed, okay? And I'm so upset that I feel like I have a fever. And so I take the cloth off your head and put it on mine, and then I need to check to see if my fever is as high as I think. So I take the thermometer out of your mouth. You with me?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So what started out as being about you in a very short time is about not actually me, but my conditioning.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's the really kind of grim part of it. Because, of course, at the very moment that you fall for that, it's going to point out how really selfish you are.
To be going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
you don't, you know... You're not really caring about your daughter. All you're doing is thinking of yourself. All you're doing is feeling sorry for yourself. This has nothing to do with compassion. This is just, can you picture it?
Yeah, and pretending that she's just fine and is just fine. But on some level, of course, she is.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Just that image of the voices coming in, my conditioning coming in between us is such a helpful thing for relationships.
It really is.
Thank you.
Yeah, and not to let our conditioning come between us and someone we love. That's a huge task because, as you say, it's so very skillful.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, and thank you, World Talk Radio, for having you so accessible and available. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you for calling us.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We're at the end of our first segment, and we'll be right back with you in just a couple of minutes. Coming up next on Open Air, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassionate awareness, responding to your email questions, and continuing to take your calls. So keep it tuned here to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sherry, I haven't given out the phone number yet today.
Oh, my goodness. It's amazing Jane found us.
Yes. Toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. The number is 877-514-7300. The phone lines are open, and we would love to hear from you today. And if you're overseas, as Anna was last week from England, You can reach us by dialing +1-858-277-1444. Sherry, I still have a stack of email questions here.
All right, let's just get on through them.
Let's get on to them. I am currently watching the breath and counting to 10 and starting over. And when I realize that I am thinking to just come back to the breath and start over. I am reading that other types of meditation involve becoming aware of moods, body sensations other than the breath. Does the monastery practice include awareness of moods and body sensations other than the breath? If so, what is the guidance? Gassho from a listener.
Well, you know, there, I could recommend a book for this person.
Uh-huh.
It's called When You're Falling Dive.
Uh-huh.
And in that, I hope... kind of explain that. There are a couple of things. First of all, our awareness practices awareness of everything.
Uh-huh.
And there's a difference between sitting in meditation and walking around the world with what we will attend to. Okay. So I'm sitting in meditation, and what I do is practice coming back to the breath. And I notice when my attention wanders, and then I bring my attention back to the breath. Something will catch my attention follows that, I notice that, I bring it back to the breath. Now, I might notice that there is a particular sensation in my body. I notice that. What I don't do is follow that sensation along. In other words, I have a sensation in my body, and there's a, I wonder if that's, okay? So, you know, if I have an old medical condition, it'll probably offer that, or maybe I ate something that I wasn't sure about, or maybe I, okay? So then there's a beginning of speculation about that. Then maybe there's a fear reaction that comes to, oh, my gosh, what if that's coming back again? Okay, and then pretty soon I'm lost in thought about whatever. So I'm practicing when I'm doing sitting meditation, just noticing what arises, dropping it, and coming back to the breath. Now, when I'm walking around in the world, I might notice that, say, I'm feeling irritable.
Uh-huh.
I notice that, and I begin to watch that. I don't necessarily turn my attention away from it in the same way and come back to the breath. Although, as I'm practicing more and more, I'm aware of the breath all the time, the breath moving in the body. The breath is the sort of the center of the awareness, and it expands out, and everything is included in that. So I notice that I'm irritable, and I begin to do this process that I call watching it out of the corner of my eye.
Uh-huh.
Going along, I'm aware. I'm aware of my body. I'm aware of the breath moving in my body. And I'm aware of the thoughts in my mind. I'm aware of this irritation. I can sort of feel it, tension in my body. I notice it in my tone of voice. You know, I'm just watching it. I'm just noticing. Okay? Now, what I'm not doing is going off into unconsciousness over it. Oh, my gosh, here I am irritable again. I wonder if it's because I ate that dessert after lunch, you know, I know that I can't handle sugar, and yet I do it anyway. I don't know when I'm ever going to... Can you picture that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, actually, of course, I could be watching that as it goes on, but that's kind of high level, okay? So I would probably just notice myself start going off into that train of thought and know that, oh, yeah, there's that train of thought about how I'm hopeless because I still eat sugar, and I just come back and I'm watching.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, in other words, to answer the question, we're paying attention all the time.
Uh-huh.
To everything. And the more we pay attention, the more subtle is our ability to be aware.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, in that way that I just described, to be walking around, knowing what's happening with your body inside and out, feeling the breath move in the body, watching the attention, noticing where the attention goes, when it goes to thoughts, when it goes to sensations in the body, when there's an emotional component, the voices, what the voices are saying, kind of the sense of what part of me is there, who's believing it, all of that at the same time.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Life gets very interesting.
Uh-huh. In a hurry.
Uh-huh.
Great. Thank you for that, Sherry. We have another caller, Sherry.
Our timing is good.
Our timing is fabulous. I'd like to welcome Rebecca from Atlanta. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi.
Good evening, Rebecca.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. What's going on?
Well, I'm calling to give a second installment because last time I called to tell you about a schedule that I had developed for my day. And that I was going to follow it for the next few weeks to see what would happen. And it's amazing what happened.
What happened?
Well, it just seemed that none of my days were the regular kinds of days that would just allow me to follow a schedule. Like all of a sudden I had to be on an airplane flying here this weekend or just it just seemed like life just came up with all of these funny little things that I had to do.
Okay, now here's the part I want to know. Do you think that you were holding an idea about how your life is and how easily it would be adapted to a schedule, and that idea was completely untrue? Or does it feel like life is sort of conspiring against you to thwart your attempt to be scheduled?
I think that the former is true.
Uh-huh.
And that it felt like the latter was happening.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it, how you can look at your life and have an idea about it that seems to have nothing to do with what's actually going on.
Yeah. And I think that was sort of why I wanted to make a schedule so that I could see how my life really was.
Uh-huh.
But that's... It happened to a certain extent, but not really.
Uh-huh.
It just seems my life is just more all over than the person that wanted the schedule would have it be. It's more kind of sometimes it's here, sometimes it's there. It depends on who I'm identified with at the time.
Yeah.
It's, wow.
Yeah, so you get one person who has an idea about how your life is. Well, we could say, probably, she has an idea about how her life is and how she wants her life to be.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't have anything to do with all these other people who share a body with her.
Exactly. To the others, it's very much, things just come and go, and I'm sort of surfing a wave a lot of the time. And to her, she really wants this predictable, everybody gets a fair share.
Yeah.
Day in and day out, aren't normal people's lives like that?
Yeah.
Whatever. And no, my life is not like that. Even in my job, I'm a teacher, and I tried to, this very same girl, the very same person, tries to make a daily schedule,
and make those
wouldn't you know it, we have an assembly.
Uh-huh.
Oh, look, there's a meeting, always.
Yeah.
And so she's like, what about my schedule?
Yeah, and she's constantly thrown off by that, and and there's a constant feeling that this is just not how it's supposed to be.
Right, and what am I going to do? I'm supposed to have this time set aside for this, and then there's this panic that she just gets into such a tizzy about.
Yeah. And is it helpful to realize that she's the one having this difficulty?
Yes.
Yeah, because if you think that you're her or she's you, then life can be lived in a tizzy.
In a what?
Tizzy.
Yes.
Yeah, because she's going to be constantly upset holding this belief that life should be a certain way that your life just isn't.
Right.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, you could have become a cloistered nun.
A what?
A cloistered nun.
What is that?
You become a a Catholic sister who lives inside a convent and never leaves it.
Well, I had always been considering coming to the monastery.
Uh-huh. Well, now, if you want a life that is completely unpredictable, you should come to the monastery.
Yeah.
She
you
would
get a
not
note in the morning and tells you what you'll be doing for the day.
Yeah, she would not be a happy girl at the monastery.
Well,
No. She would be happy in a convent.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because there the schedule is exactly the same for like 60 or 70 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But other folks in you clearly are not interested in that because that's not what you decided to do with your life.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because when the schedule just wasn't working, so many players were like, oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, what are we going to do instead? What's going on now? Like, there were just all these different reactions. And it was just interesting to hear self-hate was involved. Oh, there were so many reactions to the schedule not happening.
Yeah, and
that
she's
I really
over there
a lot.
She's just in a state.
Yeah, she. Uh-huh. Yeah, and then all of the different players that take care of her and say, oh, it's okay. Oh, there's so many reactions to her.
Yeah, yeah. Well, clearly she's a big player.
Yeah, that she got to make that schedule up.
Yeah, she's a big part of your life, right?
I'm having a hard time telling. I've usually been a very disorganized person. I think that she might be in reaction to most of my life, and she hasn't gotten a lot of airtime. And
well,
then she gets to be in her tizzy. So, yeah.
Yeah, she, you know, what aspects of the personality say they want and what they're actually about is not necessarily, those are not necessarily the same thing.
Hey!
So she can get a great deal of airtime being unhappy about your lack of organization.
Hey, you've revealed her!
You know, just because somebody says they're unhappy, that doesn't mean they're unhappy being unhappy.
Right.
Yeah.
So that is her.
Yeah. So if that's the case, then she can be very content being in a tizzy about the schedule not working.
Oh, my God.
It gives her a purpose.
Yes. It feels like there's two players involved. It feels like there's one that gets to feel the tizzy and be really upset about everything.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the one that tries to make the schedule to make the tizzy person happy.
Yeah. And the calming and trying to placate and make another plan and
right
yeah oh that's
the one who
good.
Always feels like everything's a mess
yeah so making that schedule has revealed a great deal
yeah
mm-hmm. So it might be helpful to begin to play with a certain period of time every day that's going to be scheduled.
A certain period of time every day that
yeah.
will be scheduled.
Yeah, so I'm going to, every day I'm going to have a scheduled hour.
Okay.
Okay, and you can let the one who wants to schedule it,
mm-hmm.
and then watch what happens with that.
Okay, I'll try it out. This is my assignment.
Very good.
Right.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Sherry.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio, another exciting show. And we are coming up to the end of our second segment, and we'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. Coming up next on Open Air will be our third and final segment of today's show, so keep it tuned here for more of Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Mm-hmm. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Phone numbers was just given, and the lines are open here, so feel free to give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Sherry, I have another email question here.
All right.
Hi, Sherry. I share an office with a person at work who is very negative. My coworker is unhappy, so nearly everything that happens around this person aggravates their general frustration with life. Suffering is a way of life for my coworker. I find that in my attempt to sympathize with my coworker, I can start becoming negative without realizing I am rolling on this path of a suffering outlook. How can I best remain a sympathetic friend while not letting my coworker affect my perspective? Thanks for your insight. I'll be listening.
Wow. That's a tough one, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
You know what occurs to me about that? This, we've been talking about aspects of the personality a little bit this evening.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to me like that's a great aspect of the personality or sub-personality, sort of a workshop.
Uh-huh.
So I come into work. Who comes into work?
Uh-huh.
The part of me who's going to be cheerful. This is my cheerful going to work personality. And it may not have, that person may not have anything to do with how I'm really feeling. In fact, it may be a huge cover-up of how I'm feeling. But I was raised to believe that when you're around other people, you should be cheerful. So I'm around other people, and by golly, I'm going to be cheerful.
Uh-huh.
I'm probably actually not, but I'm going to be.
Uh-huh.
And then I run into you, and you are a real grouch. So what happens to me when I run into you?
Uh-huh.
Do I try to compensate? Do I try to be cheerier, to cheer you up, and become more irritable and annoyed as time goes on? Do I resent you, but I work hard to not let anybody know that that's going on, so inside I'm kind of seething around? What's going on? Who's there? Now, what we want to believe, and almost all of us believe this deeply almost all the time, I would be fine if it weren't for you. Okay? In other words, I can manage my my moods, my attitude, my outlook in a way that meets my standards, sort of, most of the time, some of the time, if I don't have to put up with you, but it's really your fault that I'm feeling this way.
Uh-huh.
And then we get into this proof kind of thing, okay? So you take a week off work, and I'm fine.
Yes.
So now I'm certain that it's you.
Uh-huh.
Because all the time you were gone, I was perfectly happy.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, it's not true, but it is, it's a delusion that most of us cling to. Because if I were actually fine, I'd be fine when you're there.
Uh-huh.
What's happening is that parts of me that are unacceptable to me are being mirrored in you. I'm projecting those parts of me that are unacceptable onto you, and then I'm reacting to you the way I react to those parts of myself. The problem is I can't control you the way I think I can control myself.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, of course, I want you to be different so that I don't have to feel what I feel. But if we actually want to be free, then those kinds of situations are kind of a gift in that sense of being a little free workshop. In fact, if it's a coworker, it's a workshop that you're getting paid to attend. you could call your work life a workshop on how to deal with difficult people. That's kind of I don't know if it still is, but for a while that was kind of a buzzy workshop title.
Yes.
So you can go somewhere and you can pay, a lot of money to have somebody walk you through dealing with difficult people, or you could just go to work and deal with your coworker every day and pay close attention and believe nothing and not take any of it personally and gain a lot of clarity. And
wow, that's great. So real opportunity to see all of those aspects that come up.
Yeah. And if we don't, if we're not holding on to this sort of thing, life should be a certain way. I'm okay if life is the way it's supposed to be. When it's not, I get really upset. I don't like to be upset. Being upset is upsetting. And so I just need to manage everything so that I don't feel upset, so that I can keep pretending that my life is the way I want it to be.
Uh-huh.
If instead we want to be aware of what's actually going on, if we want to wake up and end suffering, then, you know, it's just annoying but true that every moment is our best opportunity to see how we cause ourselves to suffer and to see how we can let that go and not suffer.
Uh-huh.
And it's so much easier to see these things in ourselves and allow them to fall away than to try to, you know, change co-workers.
Uh-huh.
Or partners, or children, or parents, or neighbors, or, yeah.
Uh-huh. When we get clear about what's going on with ourselves, then the issues outside may drop away or be transformed.
Yes. Yeah. If nothing else, you know, I'm as I make peace with that part of myself who is like that coworker that I'm having such a difficulty with, I'm going to view that coworker in a different light. You know, so if I realize, well, you know, she's just like the part of me who felt intimidated by my mother because my mother was, all, you know, all this stuff, then, you know, I can look at this person and go, and have a reaction of, well, wow, I wonder what's really going on with her.
Uh-huh.
You know, what is it? You know, I might actually be interested enough to try to find out instead of just trying to get rid of her.
Uh-huh.
I might actually be able to be somebody with whom she can be all right. I could might even kind of lighten her load a little. You never know.
Uh-huh. Possibilities.
Possibilities.
Great. Yeah. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you. The number is toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. It's 877-514-7300. Sherry, another email question for you.
All right.
This one from Germany. Hi, Sherry. I would like to express my deep gratitude to you for sharing your thought-provoking and revealing insights. Until very recently, I would have described myself as a person who has a hard time to make a decision. However, in a moment of clarity, I found out that this is not the case. When I reverted to the old German word, Bauchgefühl, which means directly translated stomach feeling, it all started to become so obvious. If I just pay close attention to my body sensations, or as you would probably call, start living from my center, everything is totally clear. No ambivalence at all. It's only when those voices come into play, which are not mine, that I become ambivalent and can't make up my mind. I wish you and Michael all the very best for your endeavors to make this world a more loving and peaceful place. All the very best from Germany.
Wow, that's great.
That's great.
Yeah, that's kind of it, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. When we're not listening to the voices, it's clear.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. There I am. I'm here. This is what's going on. And then that helpful little voice comes in to second guess, to kind of wonder, to present another possibility, bring in a little element of anxiety maybe or insecurity.
Yes.
Question a little, and then pretty soon I'm off and running, and I don't know what I should do, and what's the right decision, and what if it's a mistake, and
yeah.
It takes me back to what we were talking about earlier with Jane, where what we were looking at was how easy it is to allow conditioning to come between us and a loved one.
Uh-huh.
It just inserts itself like a little wedge, and then it begins to kind of pry things apart, and pretty soon there's such a yawning chasm between us and that loved one that it feels like we can't reach one another.
Uh-huh.
And in this case, what, to to me what's being described is that same process within ourselves. So it's kind of conditioning attempting to insert itself between me and my heart. So
yes.
Now I feel separate from myself. I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't really trust myself. I can't tell. What if I'm wrong? Whereas if I'm just here and present and breathing, fine. There's no problem.
Great. Thank you for that, Sherry.
Well, you're very welcome.
We have just a couple minutes left here. And Sherry, I have a short email question here.
I'll talk fast.
In your last program, you respond to a guy that had regrets about something that he did. You told him that he should just say, quote, well, that's happened then. There's nothing I can do to change that. I have learned a lot from it. I hope I'm paraphrasing this well. It seemed to me that there was not room for regret. Is there such a thing as a healthy remorse? Isn't that part of what helps us learn things?
No.
Is there a place to try to repair a damage we know we have caused? Thank you.
No, that's not what we were talking about. No, not in my world. There's no such thing as a healthy regret. That's not how we learn. Feeling bad is not how we learn. That's a vicious, ugly plot put forth by self-hatred. The way we learn is by learning. And the kinds of insights that are helpful to us come to us in a moment of insight, in a moment of clarity, and they come without judgment. And in that moment of insight and clarity, we are changed. But feeling bad, no. If there were an argument for feeling bad, okay, you do something, and perhaps you had no idea what you were actually doing, and then you get it. Okay, that was a really awful, rotten, terrible, horrible thing to do. I feel really bad about that. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry I did that. Okay, that's the end of it. Feeling bad for the rest of your life is not going to do anything except make you feel bad. And there is, for most of us, a price to be paid by others for us feeling bad. Because the way the cycle usually goes is, I feel bad, so I've done something to you. I've done something rotten to you, and I feel bad. And I feel bad, and I feel bad, and I feel bad. And then pretty soon, conditioning gets tired of feeling bad. And so I start hearing cases about how it wasn't really that bad, and if you were any kind of person at all, you would forgive me, and I don't know why you're so upset about it anyway, and what's the matter with you? And pretty soon we've gone from I did something to it's your fault. And now I'm going to punish you because I feel bad for having done something to you. Now, no. No, I have no use for regret. I have no use for guilt. I have no use for feeling bad. It doesn't teach us anything.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about being oblivious,
yeah,
just skating along through life, you know, leaving a trail of broken people behind me. It's not that. I get it. That wasn't good. That was not skillful. I don't want to do that anymore. I've learned from that. You know, it's kind of the way our laws are set up. You know, you break the law, you go to jail, you've paid your debt to society.
Yeah.
We don't get to punish you for the rest of your life. Of course we do. But we're not supposed to.
Yeah. Thank you, Sherry.
Oh, maybe this will start a conversation for next week.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael.
I'd like to thank all of our listeners and all of our callers today. It was great to have you with us. If you'd like to reach us when we're not on the air, you can send an email to openair@livingcompassion.org. We'll talk to you next week.
Good night.
Good night.